This is the GamesIndustry.biz microcast on Tuesday, the 2nd of April, 2024. I am James Batchelor, Editor-in-Chief of GamesIndustry.biz, and I am joined, as always, by Head of GamesIndustry.biz, Christopher Dring. Good morning, sir.
Morning. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, yes. We dared to have a day off yesterday for Easter Monday. I didn't get anywhere near as much chocolate as my children did, but I will definitely be eating it once they're asleep. Before we begin, do you have any more kind of GDC gossip or little hints to drop in that might send? Because the view count on our, I don't necessarily know about like listener downloads, but the view count on the YouTube version of this microcast for last week is thousands more than the week before because
I said something
because you said things.
I said things. I was jet lagged. Me forgot to put the filter up. Yes. Well, interesting. We didn't even think it was that big a deal. We didn't even call it out in our promotion for the podcast whatsoever. Someone else found it. For those that don't know, James, last week we talked about Xbox a little bit. We tend to do that. And I talked about how a couple of publishers, games companies in DDC were questioning supporting the Xbox because of the sales and performance of it, particularly outside of the US. That got picked up by a news outlet. X's algorithms change or something's changed with X's. I didn't even realise that it had blown up until Jeff Keighley messaged me and said, I see you in the news. And I genuinely hadn't realised it. And obviously I suspect there's lots of angry Xbox fans. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're not angry. Maybe they're all calm and serene and reasonable about it. I did not see the comments, but I imagine there are lots. But yeah, that sort of went somewhere. I think it's worth noting that what people say at a bar or in private at GDC it doesn't reflect like necessarily company strategy. I remember when the Switch launched, there was I'm not gonna name them. A major Japanese games publisher said to me, and I mean major, said to me that the Switch's cartridges were too expensive and it was too much of a pain. And I'm talking about senior person's company. It's not the profit on it. It's not good enough and all this kind of stuff. And you know, they didn't say they weren't going to support it, but it sounded to me like they were not going to be all in on it. But then they were all in on it.
Yeah.
And it was like because you know certain issues might put them make them annoyed about something doesn't mean they you know people might say they don't see the justifiable to support Xbox on day one, but you know maybe 6 months down the line they're going to want to put that game in Game Pass, right? And in which case, you know, in order to put the game in Game Pass they'd have an Xbox version. I don't think it means anything. Interestingly, shortly after the podcast went out and started news story, a major European retailer told me that they were struggling to sell anything with an Xbox logo on it, and you know they had conversations internally about it, but ultimately they just went, well, you know, it's not that many games out there, we can support it. And I think it's worth noting that it's not as big a deal as it used to be. Like, do you remember back in the day when the Dreamcast was dead and EA not supporting the Dreamcast was seen as a major reason for that?
Yeah.
And you know, the moment retail lost confidence in Nintendo, in the GameCube, in the Wii U was seen as a real blow because Nintendo didn't have the physical distribution that they needed to reach a mass audience. That was a blowback. Nowadays, with direct consumer selling, you can do it via Amazon, if you do it your own use via your own site, with thousands of games of quite high quality coming out all the time, you know, we're not competing for just the big publishers are actually not releasing as many games as they used to. It's not that big a deal. It's obviously a disappointment if your publisher doesn't support you or get your console day one. So I want to caveat everything that I said last week and didn't caveat last week.
The filter is back up.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to be, what's really irritating is when anything blows up about from the podcast, something I've tweeted or something I said in an article, it's always about Xbox. Everyone thinks they must think I hate Xbox.
the conversation has been around Xbox for years now in terms of like Xbox is what, so you've got a piece coming up on the site, I think today, if not certainly this week. Like, Xbox has been trying its damnedest to disrupt the industry. Xbox is undeniably in third place in the console race, if the console race is a race. You know, console wars are a...
We know it.
Xbox are undeniably in third place. They are trying to disrupt in different ways. They've started with Game Pass. They've started with, you know, the low entry point of Xbox Series X. And as you kind of point out in your piece, like, none of this has quite taken off. And the result is that Xbox, for all the ambition it's done, for all the expense it's put into trying to disrupt things, it is still behind. And I think a lot of the attention inevitably goes on the, you know, the underdog or the third player, because it's like, right, well, what are they going to do? What are they going to, are they going to recover, or are they going to drop out? The conversation we had earlier this year around like the prospect of more games coming to Xbox games coming to other platforms, that was, we talked about this on the Microcast, like that, that escalated, you know, the actual news, the actual announcement was four games, four older games are coming to other platforms. That escalated in some corners of the internet to Xbox is going to drop out of hardware completely. Like, yeah, there's so much conversation about what Xbox is going to do to get out of its situation that, it, that it's in at the moment, that, yeah, inevitably, there's a lot more scrutiny. That and the fact that, like, Xbox are a lot more open about their strategy at the moment.
Yeah, they talk, like, they talk a lot.
They talk
and,
a lot.
And so I mean, we report on it a lot. And yeah, it's just, you know, we have, Sony don't talk a lot. They just. But I think I've said it in the piece you're referring to, and I sort of said it online, but again, I didn't say it very clearly, is that I think if there's something that Xbox has, I think they have tried to disrupt things, and I actually think some of that Series S, Game Pass, streaming as well, that's a disruption. They're trying to disrupt things. They're trying to grow the industry. But they haven't quite got the games right, and that's the bit that they've sort of fallen down on. I'm not saying they haven't made good games. They've made loads of good games. Now, I'm a massive Sea of Thieves advocate. You don't get a bigger Sea of Thieves fan than me, but it's the right games for the right scenario. So you've got the Series S, right? Series S is supposed to be a games console that comes out. It's supposed to bring in audiences that perhaps normally would wait a few years, right at the start of the console generation. That's interesting. That's an interesting idea. But you need to give them something that they want. You need to go, right, here's the console. It's affordable, and here's Halo Infinite. And not only is Halo Infinite the game that launches with the Series S, it is a proper, full-on, the next generation, the future direction of shooters, like the way Halo 1 to 3 was, like complete, revolutionary, wonderful, high-quality experience. It was a great game. I really like Halo Infinite. However, it wasn't delivered that, and it arrived a year late. And that's an example of me saying they didn't have anything to go with the Series S. You need to have the game to go with the strategy, with the hardware, or games. Like Game Pass, it's not one game. You need to have a regular cadence. Xbox used to say they needed a game every quarter, a decent game every quarter. We almost got to that point now. In fact, we may have even got to that point now. But if you look at the four games they released last year, Hi-Fi Rush, niche, but absolutely excellent.
Yeah.
Redfall, I'd still say quite niche, but not excellent. Starfield, great game, clearly, but in a year where there was lots of 9 out of 10s and 10 out of 10s, it didn't quite deliver what people would hope for it. And then Forza Motorsports disappointed people, from what I understand. It certainly didn't sell very well. So you've got this thing where, like, well, that's not going to do your Game Pass. That's not going to help your Game Pass job. They've still got time, obviously, but there's that question about, you know, here's a thing that I thought was interesting. Phil Spencer did an interview with Polygon this week. I think it was with Polygon for all of it. And he made a comment about other stores on Xbox. And that, for me, is quite interesting because it does fit with what Xbox have been saying all along about bringing down those walled gardens. Imagine an Xbox that's got Steam on it. Right. Yeah. I know they used Epic Game Store and itch, so I think that was the question. But like, imagine it's like a Steam machine, really, but ideally with something that's, you know, a little bit compelling. Steam machines are rubbish, but there's sort of, you know, PC under your TV, Xbox UI with Game Pass in there, but also you can get your games from other platforms. I think that would be quite a compelling, interesting project. I don't think PlayStation would be too worried about it, but it would allow Xbox to sort of just help distribute its thing. That's what we're talking about here now. They've got this huge library of games from Call of Duty down to Redfall and all this sort of stuff in between, and it's like you've got these if they can have a platform that they just need to get it out through as many devices and platforms as they possibly can, through mobile stores, through Game Pass, through streaming, through hardware, and that would be quite an interesting, compelling hardware case, right? The one that has Where you, that's the dream. One games console, and it's got all of it on it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're veering into the "our console's dead" or "our generation's dead," etc. conversation, which has been going on for decades. But like, I was going to ask about Phil's comments about, like, you know, potentially getting other stores onto Xbox. Like you say, it absolutely fits with the strategy that Microsoft's been talking quite loudly about for the last, you know, five to ten years. I'm intrigued. Like, we're in danger of veering into kind of massive speculation territory, but it really would kind of it would signify like a really big change in the console space. Like consoles have always been walled gardens. Like just by their nature, they are purpose-built devices to, you know, by platform holders, and the platform holders control this really tightly. But there's so much conversation now around ecosystems, and particularly in like the mobile space. We've seen Epic has obviously particularly taken on like, you know, Android and iOS, so, you know, Apple and Google are trying to kind of open those to other stores. They've got a little bit of a victory in terms of, you know, not necessarily Epic has achieved this, but like the conversation has escalated to the point where the EU has demanded that Apple open up iOS to other stores as part of the to comply with the Digital Markets Act, which is, I believe, now in effect, or certainly if not very, very soon into effect. Yeah. And there's been back and forth. And Microsoft has been part of that conversation as well. Microsoft has backed Epic in its trial against Apple, and I believe it kind of backed it in the trial against Google. Like, so Microsoft has kind of made its stance clear on this. Like, so the idea of then bringing that kind of that opinion into its own ecosystem, I find really interesting. I can absolutely imagine an Epic Game Store and an itch on Xbox. It opens up the whole conversation of whether or not those stores will be as popular or do as well as, I mean, that also extends to mobile. Like, you know, just because you have alternative app stores, are people going to actually use them? Would it create pressure? Again, this is really into speculation. Like, would it create pressure on Sony and Microsoft to, Sony and Nintendo to start opening up their ecosystems?
Yeah, well, I think Nintendo's slightly different. I think if you look at PlayStation, Xbox very much feels like a PC.
Hmm.
PC that you plug into your TV in many ways. Like, it's the game, the sort of games on it. They used to be the case. It used to be things like Kinect and stuff, which was like a very living room style element to that console. But nowadays, it's like the games you're playing on it are the same games you get on PC. And Xbox's first party games all across both.
Yeah.
PlayStation is mostly like that. There are some elements to it that's clearly built. I think VR is quite a living room friendly product, and they've got things like the DualSense is very much they're still living room ish, but it still feels very much like not too far away from what Xbox is. Nintendo does feel like hardware, the hardware that's built, the games are built for the hardware. Like those two things are tied together. It's not, you know, the Switch is not just a means for playing Switch games. It's also where the motion controls are and the tilt is and the touch screens. And Nintendo still very much marry that tech with, when I say tech, I don't mean, you know, the insides. I mean sort of the novelty element of it with the software. So it's sort of those two things go hand in hand.
Their games are built as much around their platform's form factor as they are the specifications.
That's a very articulate way of, it's what I was waffling through. So I think it's a little different for Nintendo at the minute, but it's something that games console, particularly Xbox, but also PlayStation, it's becoming increasingly like PCs. The biggest games on Xbox and PlayStation are the biggest games that are also on PC. Mm. We're seeing those two worlds get closer and closer and closer. And when you start thinking about how open PC is and the opportunity you have on PC, I think the pressure, and Xbox, you know, trying to disrupt things. What a great way of disrupting the console space by suddenly bringing down its own wall. The problem is, just because Xbox is bringing down the wall, I don't think means everyone else is going to bring it.
No.
Oh, if you're going to let us, you're going to let Steam be on your console, we'll let Game Pass come on our Steam platform. I don't know. I don't believe
It worked with cross-platform play. Like that was a wall that got brought down, and kind of Sony was the last to move on that. But like this is actually like kind of a more transactional wall. Like Sony and Nintendo, in my head, particularly Nintendo, will want to keep their ecosystem closed, keep it controlled, and maximise the value.
I don't mean this in a derogatory way, because you know I'm Nintendo's my console of choice, but they're a kids' platform.
Yeah,
they're meant for families, and that safety, that confidence that when you get that machine and you know it's. They're not going to be bombarded with toxicity, and it's that's really valuable.
Similar to like the games, you said like, oh, wouldn't it be great if you had a Steam on Xbox? You think about the amount of games that are on Steam, like, you know, the very inappropriate games you get from like random, very small developers. Imagine those on Nintendo, like just Nintendo, which you wouldn't.
Yeah, whenever we get something a bit dodgy turn up on a Nintendo platform, it becomes headline news, right? Nintendo don't want to do that. They are very controlling of their system. And I know that, you know, gamers don't like that, but I'm speaking as a dad, I do like that.
Yeah. No, okay. Right, we're well into speculation here, so I think we should probably... And we're also 15 minutes into the microcast, so we should probably talk about some actual news. Some of that was news, But no, there was a couple of stories I really did want to talk about. So Thursday, we actually just saw like two big sales and one slightly smaller sale. So for, you know, three's a trend. Yeah, two's coincidence, three's a trend, as the saying goes. There were three divestments, two of them particularly big. So Embracer sold Gearbox Entertainment to Take-Two. Sega sold Relic, and Relic is becoming an independent studio. I am actually going to read some notes this time from the GI Daily newsletter, which you should all be signed up for. And if you're not... The link to sign up is in the show notes on the audio version. If you're watching on YouTube, a link will now appear somewhere here. He says, pointing. Professional podcasting at its best. So, Take-Two is acquiring Gearbox from Embracer for $460 million. It's now going to operate under the 2K label. Founder and CEO Randy Pitchford is still in charge. In addition to Borderlands, it means that... So Take-Two now has full ownership of the Borderlands rights. Previously, like, kind of had publishing rights, but Gearbox owned the IP. Borderlands is now fully owned by Take-Two. In addition to Borderlands, it now owns Homeworld, Duke Nukem, Brothers in Arms, Risk of Rain, and other future Gearbox titles. Gearbox is currently working on a number of things. There are six titles in the works, including two Borderlands games. My guess is Borderlands 4 and a Tiny Tina's follow-up. Two Homeworld titles and at least one new IP. So Embracer, I'll come back to Embracer in a minute, actually, but Embracer has said that this is the end of its restructure. We can talk about that in a minute. Sega has sold Relic. So thanks to an external investor, Relic Entertainment, which is the studio behind Company Heroes, is going to become an independent studio. As part of this kind of cut down of its Western operations, Sega has also announced that it's going to lay off 240 people across Sega Europe, including UK-based developers Creative Assembly and Sega Hardlight. Most of the jobs are going to come across Creative Assembly and Sega Europe. There's going to be a small number of layoffs at Hardlight. There wasn't any kind of mention whether or not there's going to be layoffs at other UK studios, like Two Point Studios, who do like Two Point Hospital, Two Point Campus and stuff like that, and Sports Interactive, which does Football Manager. There's no words on whether or not there's going to be job cuts there. The third sale was Thunderful has sold Head Up, which is the publisher of Bridge Constructor. They've been trying to sell this since, I think, like kind of October, November-ish. They finally kind of sold it. Sold for 500,000 euros to Microcuts Holding, which is a legal entity controlled by Dieter Schola, who is founder and CEO of Head Up. So that's kind of a
management
similar to Saber, from a couple of weeks back. It's a company being sold essentially into the hands of someone that run it.
Yeah,
to get this independence back. Really big stuff there. I kind of want to focus on Embracer first, because Embracer's obviously been big ongoing story. Funnily enough, before you jumped onto into the studio, Chris, like I was writing up, there was a webcast after the sale of Gearbox where they were talking to investors, and they were saying that Lars Wingefors, the CEO, said that this is the end of the restructure. They are ending the restructuring program. They began in June. It finished in March. So they are not looking to sell any other businesses. They've actually apparently had interesting parties coming and asking about buying certain assets and studios at Scout. And they've said, like, no, nothing else is for sale. It's too early to talk about whether or not they're planning to acquire or merge any other studio. They don't really want to talk about that just yet. I can't find any kind of concrete information as to whether or not it means that the layoffs are over. Obviously, you know, Embracer has laid off like well over 1,400 people in the past 9 months. Hopefully that is now an end if the restructuring is. Gearbox is kind of the final point in what has been a really big story over the past year. I was intrigued to get your thoughts, Chris.
Yeah, well, it's quite a lot of different elements there. I think it's Gearbox, I think it was always going to be Take-Two.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, they've got to protect that studio. Borderlands is a major IP for them. I'm not sure Take-Two necessarily wanted to buy a studio of that size and scale. I don't think anyone needs to really add that kind of headcount in the minute. But obviously, Borderlands is there. It's one of 2K's key games. 2K actually hasn't had the best run of things. Their sports games have done well, but actually outside of that, they've not had a great run over the last few years. Borderlands is obviously a key title for them. So I always thought it was going to be them. Gearbox didn't want to be independent. So I think it makes sense that it's they've sort of gone back to they're now company owned. It's all in one place. It feels I think they've had to make some layoffs, haven't they, as a result of the integration? Maybe
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of tricky. It's just whether Gearbox, I'm just wary of Gearbox becoming 2K's Borderlands factory, right? Rather than, you know, the growth opportunity that Gearbox perhaps was looking for to come at.
I imagine Gearbox are concerned about that as well. So, like, the webcast I'm listening to with Lars Wingefors, like, he was saying that when they bought Gearbox, it's because Gearbox had a lot of kind of ambition. They wanted to kind of grow in what they do. They I think it's the exact phrase, like, they want to. They had ambitious plans to entertain the world. And I thought that meant through things like the fact they own a TV and film studio, and they've kind of branched out and they're making the Borderlands movie themselves. But no, he said primarily through, like, obviously, like, you know, games and publishing other people's games. Gearbox started publishing third party titles, and then, like, they've got new IP in the works. So Gearbox clearly had ambitions, and Embracer had poured a lot of money into kind of enabling those ambitions. They were about, I think he said they were around 3 years into the 6 year deal of this is how we plan to grow Gearbox. And unfortunately, like, everything else that happened around the Embracer group has necessitated them selling, like, yeah, they,
and you have to wonder whether, yeah, you know, I don't know, Private Division, is that working out for Take-Two?
There's a lot of questions
around, you know, their last game was Penny's Big Breakaway. It didn't seem to do huge numbers, so I think there's quite a question mark around Private Divisions, let alone Gearbox's own publishing arm. And there's a lot of stuff that Take-Two have already that they won't need from this. But we'll see. I mean, Randy seemed quite, in his quote, obviously it's a PR quote, you'd take it with a pinch of salt, but he seems to suggest that it was all about growing Gearbox and that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't be surprised if some of those dreams are may not be followed through on within a bigger publisher.
Take-Two is kind of one of the many companies I think that's kind of mirroring what's going on in the industry in terms of, like, I'm thinking again back to your piece where, like, the release date is so quiet this year. Like, a lot of, you know, we've said before, like, a lot of the conversation is around surviving 2024 until getting 2025. Take-Two will have a great 2025 because it's got GTA 5. And you've got GTA 6 coming up in 2025. You've got things like Judas. We're starting to see Judas. Now, I don't know that Judas is 2025. I don't, and I'm not saying that Judas is going to be as big as GTA 6, but it should, you know, it's looking promising. Like, Ken Levine's new title, it is looking like it's going to be a hit.
There will be generations of people that have never heard of Ken Levine.
There will be, that's true. That's true. But this is the trouble. This is what I mean. Like, Take-Two have got some solid hits on the way, but, you know, GTA 6 has been in the works for so damn long. Judas has been in the work for 10 years. Like, there's an element of you want to enable your developers to take the time they require to make the game they want to, but in the end, you have a business to run. You still need to keep things coming in.
Take-Two's an interesting one because they've got the foundation of that business there. If the game isn't right, they don't have to put it out.
No,
right?
That's true.
You know, they've got this money coming from NBA. They've got this money from Grand Theft Auto 5. That I said it right in that case. Red Dead Redemption 2 is still doing the business for them as well. Like, they've got these really successful sort of evergreen games that are just bringing in lots of money for them. And if Ken Levine needs an extra year to make his narrative Legos, then give him an extra year or nine. So they have got that capacity. I think if you're 2K, if you're the division within Take-Two,
yes,
I think you're probably going, yeah, actually, we need to start delivering a bit here. But there's that element to it.
Before we wrap up, thoughts on Relic going independent?
Relic's an interesting one. They haven't really delivered for Sega. The games have done fine, like Company Hero and Dawn. And actually, probably their bigger hit, they did Age of Empires for Microsoft as well. And so they've been an interesting one. Here's the thing with Sega. It's really sad because, how long ago was it when Sega Europe was the crown jewel in Sega's thing? You know, it was that was their digital business. It was Creative Assembly with Total War. It was Football Manager. It was stuff they were doing with, I forgot the name of the studio that was making that sort of a 4X game. And there was all these sort of wonder, they were growing and they were doing loads of interesting things.
Amplitude,
that's it. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, a lot of those have been untouched by this, but suddenly now it's... I was actually given a heads up that things, trouble was coming to Sega Europe at GDC. And I thought, well, not more for Creative Assembly, right? You know, what a wonderful studio. Creative Assembly does so much good for the games industry. In terms of what they try to do in leveling people up and supporting. They're one of the few people that support student events, few publishers, because developers are like, we don't need students, but Creative Assembly are always thinking 5-10 years ahead. They are very much ingrained in the ecosystem, a very supportive team. I've always great value for can't say enough nice things enough about Creative Assembly. And they had Hyenas didn't work out for them. Maybe we should have seen that coming. And then they hit again. Relic going independent probably makes sense to Relic. You know, they're quite similar to Creative Assembly in many respects in terms of the types of game they make, strategy games. And they probably, you know, again, their independence might give them the freedom to take those IPs and look after them in a way that maybe IO Interactive did with Hitman and doesn't, you know. It might fit better, but
maybe also kind of like work with other companies, as you say, like they worked with Microsoft on Age of Empire, on the new Age of Empires. Like maybe they can work with other publishers, bring their expertise.
But Creative Assembly worked with Microsoft on Halo Wars 2, right? You've seen Sega do this sort of thing, but I will say, I think it's real sadness with Sega Europe because they were really hot property not so long ago, and they're wonderful teams. They really do the right things, and to see that side of the business just get hit hard by what's going on is a real shame. But I do think it's interesting that after weeks and weeks and weeks of really, really bleak news around closures and stuff, and we've still got some of that, what we're reporting on at the moment is we've seen investment. We've seen companies be able to spin out and find spin out from their company's Relic. You've got Saber before that, right? And that. So there's some of the news that has come out ahead of and just after GDC isn't quite as bleak as the first 2 months of the year were, and I'm hoping that's a sign.
Fingers crossed for that. I agree. I hope that is a sign of better times to come. Hopefully, a bit more of a positive summer for the games industry. That is all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back next Monday as usual because there's no bank holiday or anything. So back to regular schedule next week. If you are listening to this, you can listen to it on the podcasting platform of your choice. If you'd like to watch us and see the faces that go with these lovely voices, we're on YouTube. You can get more news, insight and analysis into the world behind video games at gamesindustry.biz. Thank you so much and we'll see you next week.